Welcome to Health, Wealth, and Happiness, a fast-paced, informative, hour-long program dealing with physical, emotional, and mental health issues, consumer information, and money management, as well as the arts, theater, travel, entertainment, social, and civic events. Brought to you by the University of South Carolina School of Medicine Specialty Clinics, the Institute for Partnerships to Eliminate Health Disparities, the Newberry Opera House, the South Carolina Philharmonic, supplements manufacturer A.J. Lanigan, Leon Jones Insurance, and the Mitchell House and Gardens. And now, here's the host of Health, Wealth, and Happiness, Gary Posick.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Health, Wealth, and Happiness. Here's a rundown of today's program. My first guest is in studio, as he will be the first Friday of the month. He's Dr. Donna Davis, a plastic surgeon from Columbia. And today we're going to talk about eye lifts. From 1:30 to 1:45 each Friday, a financial planner by the name of Alan Haft is my guest. He's going to talk about how to get free money from the government. No, I'm not talking about going on welfare, no. This is a Social Security strategy, and my final guest of the day will be Ted Underwood from the South Carolina State Museum, here to talk about the Fall Heritage Festival, which will take place on the 21st of September, which is 2 weeks from tomorrow. So I hope you'll stay tuned for the entire program, and welcome back, because he's been on the program before, Dr. Donna Davis. Good Thanks. To have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you know, when you talk about eye lifts, what are you talking about specifically here? Are you talking about eyelids? Are you talking about under the eyes? Because I think, you know, a lot of people may be a little bit confused. Just what are you talking about here?
I think that's a great question. You can talk about a more specific area, just the eyelids themselves, but usually it does incorporate whether or not a person has needs repositioning of their eyebrow, lower forehead, crow's feet, or now we have really learned some more non-invasive techniques to help with what we call the central face through an eye lift.
Isn't it interesting? It's okay for a man to have crow's feet. It kind of gives him dignity. Not so much for women. Boy, they don't like it.
There are tons of studies that prove what you're saying. Women tend to gravitate towards men that look rugged, whereas men don't tend to gravitate towards women that look rugged. So, sure, that is true, though eyelid surgery is very popular with men.
And that brings up the whole subject, as we've touched upon briefly before, plastic surgery among men. And I don't have any statistics. Maybe you do. I'm going to guess has really skyrocketed, certainly in the last 10 years, maybe the last 20 years.
Absolutely. And really, even in the period of my private practice has been 11 years. And just in that 11 years, you've seen a huge surge in men wishing to have plastic surgery. With eye lifts in particular, though, an upper eyelid is different than the lower eyelid, and there can be functional problems that people experience that actually allows that to be an insurance-covered event for the upper eyelids.
How so?
Well, not specifically with nerve damage to the eye or vision trouble per se to the eye, but there is functional use of an eye where if your eyelid is too heavy, it diminishes both your peripheral vision and your direct gaze. So you'll literally hear somebody say that they come up to a stoplight and now I have to tilt my head back to see when the light changes because their upper eyelid has become so heavy it's hooding their eyeball. That can be an insurance-covered event.
How about somebody who's had a stroke? Is there anything you can do for them? Because sometimes it does affect the eyelid.
Well, we do, and we have reconstruction of the eyelids for people that have had skin cancers to the eyelids. The problem, unfortunately, for people with strokes is then you have to pick kind of a happy medium of giving them some use of the eyelid, but they won't have any control over it. And so we fear the drying out of the eyeball.
Oh, okay.
So we can raise or lower the height of their eyelid to help them see better, but we have to kind of cheat that to the middle so that they don't dry out too much.
And I'm sure that's discussed, but it's almost in the eyes of the beholder, no pun intended. You can explain how that's going to be, but until you really experience it, it's kind of hard to. And obviously, dry eye in and of itself is a problem. Why do I say that? Well, rarely does a night go by that you don't see at least one commercial for dry eye.
You're right. You know, and that's why the first consultation is so important. You have a few things that you have to identify both physically for the patient and their subjective wishes. They don't always coincide. So we are concerned that if somebody already has dry eye by nature or by certain medical conditions prior to the surgery, that we could exacerbate that with the surgery. And that would be potentially devastating to a patient.
Your practice is kind of like that of a photographer. You can do everything right as a surgeon, but I don't like what you did. And that's just because it's kind of like in this business, people will say, I don't like my voice. I don't like what I hear, because most people are not used to hearing themselves being recorded. And once they hear that on a CD, it is their voice. It hasn't been changed. The microphone doesn't change the way you sound. But it's the first time many people have ever heard themselves, and they don't like what they hear. How do you control that? Because, you know, I've had a nose job. I came to you for a nose job. You explained to me what you were going to do. You gave me examples of kind of what I would look like when I had a nose job. Now I've had the nose job, and I ain't happy.
Well, that's a great analogy. Again, you know, there should be a very long process to making a decision about having surgery that changes one's appearance. And, you know, we have several techniques that we try to incorporate. You know, we first listen carefully to a patient's goal. We then try to express back to them how safely that goal could be met. We try to show them that there is a marriage between science and art with plastic surgery, and that there are certain parameters, body proportions that we try to adhere to. And then you try to show them before and after pictures, especially with the eyes. I think a lot of people are mistakenly under the belief that it should be a subtle result. That should be the goal of it. It will look very unusual if it is not subtle. The most classic example of it for eye surgery really is there's a famous divorce of a billionaire in New York, and the wife was in the tabloids daily. They called her the Catwoman of New York. She had so much severe eye surgery that she really did not look human-like. That's not the goal of the surgery.
And yeah, you don't want to end up looking like Joan Rivers.
Right. So it is millimeters of change, not inches, when you talk about somebody's eyes. Otherwise, it is disfiguring and unusual looking. And so, again, you want to prepare the patient for that and give them time to contemplate that before they actually go under the knife, before they commit to the surgery.
And here again, I guess it is in the eyes of the beholder. I saw a recent photograph of Kenny Rogers. It was his birthday. Kenny obviously has had work done. I think he looks crappy. I think he looked a hell of a lot better, rugged, in his natural form than he did with the facelift. I think he doesn't look natural.
Well, and I would agree with you from a personal preference also. The unique thing about people in the media, Kenny Rogers and Burt Reynolds both look way too tight around their eyes, though I have never heard one of them speak negatively about it. So you must assume that they liked it. It is not, though, what we try to achieve for people. So the eye tends to be the earliest part of noticeable aging to the face, the eyelids.
Mm-hmm.
And so it tends to be the first procedure that people undergo if they're curious about having some facial rejuvenation. When they do it, the goal should be for both the surgeon and the patient to make somebody look more well-rested and more in proportion with the rest of their face.
What can you do for somebody who has circles under their eyes? Not for lack of sleep necessarily, just naturally has circles under their eyes.
Well, you know, that's one of the biggest questions when people do come in the office. And there are several things. So it's about the physical exam, because some people it could be a vitamin deficiency. Others, it could really just be that they have pale skin and they're seeing the vascularity of their skin causing discoloration. But really, most of it's about bulging of the fat. We have fat that is needed around the eyes. It starts to bulge almost like a hernia over time. And that is a surgical, there is a remedy for that surgically.
Are there times when you've done an examination on a patient that you say, quite frankly, Gary, there's nothing I can do for you.
Often, you know, you want to be honest with patients. And so I find it frustrating that sometimes the market rushes to present things to patients that are not well scientifically thought out. And so most of the stuff on the market for dark circles around the eyes don't work. And patients are equally frustrated after they come in for an appointment and you say to them, honestly, there is really not something that will improve that condition for you. But it's the honest thing to do. You have to do it for people.
ABC News has a product that they've run this summer called Looking Out, and it's supposedly looking out for the consumer. One of the segments they had on the week before last dealt with makeup. Cheap makeup, makeup that you buy at the drugstore, and very expensive makeup. What do I mean by that? Cheap makeup, $44 worth of makeup. Makeup at the buy in the drugstore, $149, and professional makeup, $750. All kinds of tests under heat, under humidity, under rain, wind, you name it. Bottom line is, the middle pretty much took care of it. Lipstick, frankly, doesn't make any difference whether it's the cheapest or the most expensive. Lipstick is lipstick is lipstick. They run it. You pay for the brand name, but lipstick is lipstick. It really doesn't make any difference. You pay $25 a tube or $2. It's going to last about the same. Base makeup, that's the big difference. That's where you really get your money's worth. But overall, they use identical triplets, all very attractive women. The bottom line is, for the gal who was made up with $149, yeah, you could make a case for the gal who was made up for the $750. But for the average person, not enough to spend that money. And I would guess here, and I don't know how often this happens, but I'm sure that there are people who come to you for a second opinion. They've already been to see a plastic surgeon. And they've gotten whatever that opinion is. And you're there as a backup or a second opinion.
That's right.
And it may be different from the first opinion they've gotten. I don't know if that information is helpful or causes even a bigger question mark in people's mind. Oh, now what do I do? Because what Dr. Davis has told me is completely different from my first evaluation. How do you handle that?
Well, I'm sure it's not uncommon. I obviously do get a lot of people come in for second opinions. I think what a patient should do is listen clearly to what it is that the difference is all about and be able to ask some insightful questions of the doctor themselves, because it may be there are things that are subjective and there are some things that are objective. And so the objective should be the same doctor to doctor. If a doctor tells a person that they have their conditions, blepharoclasis or dermatoclasis, and another doctor says you don't, that's a problem because that's an objective finding.
Right.
But if a doctor says to you, I think I can do this with a laser, and the other doctor says I need to do a surgical lift, that could be subjective. And you want to listen carefully to see what those differences are and be careful that all of your questions are answered.
I think there are a couple of things that are very important. I think having someone who is board certified tells you that they are skilled and they have experience. And that's important to you, the patient, if you don't know anything else. But by God, if I'm going to have a procedure done by you, question number one out of the box for me is going to be, how many of these eye lifts have you done? That's going to be my first question. Big difference if you tell me 4 or 400. Big difference, huh?
Absolutely. And I think that is important for people to know. The problem, I think, again, is marketing. I think the public assumes that anybody that has doctor behind their name is trained. That it's not necessarily true. And board certification has value. It just states simply that a person has not only achieved a certain level of competency, but they have maintained that level. And And then the more delicate question is, you know, is this a surgery you perform? How often do you perform it? What are your results like? What are your complications like? People need to know that. They should know that.
Absolutely true. We'll take a break and come back with more right after this.
Heart disease, joint pain, allergies, eye care. The list of health needs we're faced with goes on and on. But it's comforting to know there is one healthcare practice in the Midlands with the expertise to take complete care of you. University Specialty Clinics. Only at University Specialty Clinics will you find a team of 200 doctors who are expert physicians and world-class medical educators. Whether you need a simple physical exam or need complete, complex medical treatment, you can trust the doctors at University Specialty Clinics to take special care of you for life. Call 255-3400 for an appointment. That number again, 255-3400. University Specialty Clinics is owned and operated by the University of South Carolina School of Medicine, where we practice what we teach.
A policy is taking care of South Carolina. Leon Jones Insurance. We're from South Carolina like you. Neighbors and friends through. A policy is taking the time to give you the service you expect to find. A policy is taking care of South Carolina. Leon Jones Insurance.
With locations in Columbia and Batesburg-Leesville, call 790-5600. That's 790-5600 for a quote. Dr. Donna Davis is a board-certified plastic surgeon. He has advanced training and experience in performing a wide variety of surgical and non-surgical techniques, from Botox, Juvederm, and other fillers to breast augmentation and reconstruction. Every procedure is thoroughly discussed and planned with a patient before being performed. Whether you're interested in a tummy tuck, having a mole removed, a facelift, body contouring, an eye lift, you owe it to yourself to have a consultation with Dr. Davis by calling 929-1901. That's 929-1901 for an appointment. Don and Davis Plastic Surgery is located at 1850 Laurel Street in downtown Columbia. We are back, and in studio with me is Dr. Davis. We're talking about eye lifts. One of the comments that you made earlier was you, we were talking about Kenny Rogers, and you also mentioned Burt Reynolds. They both have obviously had some work done around their eyes. Whether they liked it or not, once done, there ain't much you can do about it. It's already been done. So like it or not, here I am, world. That's why this consultation is real important and you understand what you're doing. One thing we haven't talked about are bags under the eyes, and let's talk about that. What can you do about it? Is that just the luck of the draw, or can you do something about it?
Well, it's disappointed all of us. I mean, I've seen it with myself with aging. The exciting thing is that we have become much more creative in how to deal with that. We were initially trained to, if there was too much laxity to the skin, to remove skin, or if there was too much laxity to the skin, to tighten the ligaments around the eye, and if there was too much fullness, the bags, then to remove the fat. We studied that more fully, and we said, well, you know, obviously, God put this fat here on purpose. There's a need for this. We should just reposition this fat. Once we got comfortable with that, we realized that with a little more care, we could even get the cheek and lift the cheek up, because there is, for a lot of people, we call it a tear trough deformity, but there is a real indentation between their eyelid and their cheek. And that can create a lot of shadowing. That can easily be erased now with some of these newer techniques through an eye lift incision.
You know, I don't know if this is a procedure that is done by a plastic surgeon or is done by someone who does tattoos, but you do see some women who will have an eye shade put on their eyelid permanently. Do you do that, or somebody else do that?
I don't do it, and I have had a lot of patients that have had it, and it looked appropriate. My worry for patients is, again, sort of like we were saying about surgery, it is a permanent maneuver. And so if a person tattoos the eyeliner on and they tattoo it on incorrectly, crooked, it cannot be corrected.
That's true. Know?
We have lasers to remove tattoos, but I would not feel comfortable lasering near, because you could damage somebody's sight.
Sure could.
You know, if it's on somebody's shoulder, you're not worried about blinding them.
That's absolutely fact. How much has, since you brought up the laser, how much has laser surgery affected your practice?
Well, I enjoy use of lasers, and again, even for eye lifts. Certain eye lifts can be done with CO2 lasers and get great dramatic results. Not people that need the fat repositioned, but if it's a skin issue, we can get amazing results with doing a laser technique. And you still have to heal from a laser, but there are no incisional scars to heal from.
When you have eye surgery or surgery done around the eyes, is this something you got to run and hide from the world for a couple of weeks, or can I go back to work on, if I have it done on Friday, can I go back to work on Monday?
Potentially, you could go back to work on Monday. It's not a painful procedure, but there is some risk of bruising. And so unless the bruising can be covered, camouflaged with makeup or sunglasses, some people will take off for 7 days. The thing that's nice about surgery is that it's fairly pain-free. It's not a long procedure. Most people can even go back to full exercises a week after the surgery. So it really has very little to no downtime unless you have some bruising.
And here again, that's the kind of thing that you discuss with a patient prior to actually doing the procedure so that they know if they need to take a week off, they can plan accordingly.
Absolutely.
So that there are no secrets. Oh, my God, I had no idea I was going to look like this. I can't possibly go back to work on Monday.
Right. Well, again, that, you know, it's very important to me to have a long consultation, and it's very important for a patient to hear also the post-operative plan, and that would include how long does it take to heal from this, how painful would it be, what kind of medications would I be required to take.
How do you handle that? I mean, the medication part of it, do most people not look at that as the I'm sure that you have patients that say, well, I didn't know I was going to be in any pain after this.
Well, hopefully not in my office, because I really do emphasize that with them, because it really has an impact even on healing if a person appreciates the plan and is able to stick to the plan. So you do want to start educating them immediately on that. For eye lifts, it's minimal. There really is not a lot that they would do. We tend to like them to use something cold, a cold compress the first night, keep their head elevated, try not to strain their eyes, meaning read continuously or watch TV for long periods of time for the first couple of days. And literally within a week, they would be back to every activity. Normal activities the day of surgery and all activities within a week.
Now, for women who are used to using cosmetics, do you tell them you can't be using cosmetics for a while?
Definitely on the incisions, or you tell them, you know, let us grade the healing process before they apply the cosmetics. And I'll also suggest that they use a new packaging of it, because that stuff tends to sit on the shelf in your home for 6 or more months at a time. It could collect bacteria.
Now, as far as the incision itself is concerned, are the stitches absorbed, or do you have to remove them? How does that work?
Well, the neat thing about it, for most of the lower eyelid lifts that we do the incision through the inside of the eyelid, and there are no stitches and no scar. For the upper eyelid, there is a scar, but the scar hides uniquely. Everybody has a natural crease on their upper eyelid other than Asians, and so it hides well all of the time in your own natural crease. There are a couple of stitches, the technique that I like to do on the upper eyelid. Those stitches come out after about 5 or 6 days, and they're not uncomfortable to take them out.
Do you use glue on occasion rather than actual stitching?
We definitely use glues a lot in surgery. The problem with glues are that they're not as strong as people think they are, and so sometimes they would not hold. It depends on how tight the closure is. And around the eye, you have to be particularly careful, because if the glue were to run when applying it, then you could, you know, injure the cornea.
And with the eyelid, obviously, it's forever moving. Not constantly, but it's moving.
It is. It's forever moving. Even in your sleep, when you have REM sleep, when you're having a dream, the eye is moving.
Yeah.
And so we're careful with that. But patients understand that, and they realize the worth in following the plan so that they get the results they want. They're very careful that first week. You know, now we even have some minimally invasive techniques to raise the eyebrow through the upper eyelid incision. So again, not creating any new scarring. You know, the advancements that have been made are huge. We have ways to position the eyebrow with a device that slowly melts over time. through the upper eyelid incision. It's dramatic how much better we are at doing that than we used to be.
This is kind of a delicate question, but I think it needs to be answered. Does it reach a point where you kind of age out? I mean, if somebody comes to you who's 85 and they want to have work done on their eyelids, do you ever say to them, frankly, maybe that's not such a great idea? Maybe you've gone beyond where any kind of cosmetic surgery probably is not going to be worth your money.
Sort of. I'm going to answer your question, but it's really patient to patient because we all have different health issues. So you'll hear doctors say, when they mean that the patient is in good enough health to have a procedure, they will use the term, she's much younger than her age, emphasizing the fact that there's no longer a standard maximum age for which you should have surgery. And we have ways to measure that risk for people. It's obviously, if they have health issues, it's out of the question, but you can measure somebody's lung, their pulmonary function, their cardiac function, all of that could be done preoperatively by their internists to determine if they are a candidate or not. But in general, so as people age, so an eye lift can be permanent, the results of that. They can be permanent.
And I think the other part of it is that certainly baby boomers, and that's where you're going to get a lot of your market, they don't want to look, quote, their age. They want to look younger. And that both men and women.
All the time, and even with a facelift, someone that has a facelift 10 years later will be curious about having it revised because they have not changed their own personality. If they're outgoing and they feel younger than they look, they will always feel that way about themselves.
I think there's a great deal of truth in this statement. You can argue with me if you like. The new, today 60 is the new 40 in a lot of ways.
Well, and I think that it was what you said, the baby boomers. You know, we have such a large percentage of the population now that are in that age group that I think we definitely notice it more because of that. And these people were always kind of very creative people, very inspired people. That was a generation that really moved the needle as far as our society went. They're not going away and they're not going to bed. They don't want to, you know, they don't want it to be over.
That's exactly true. For those people who are interested in having a consultation with you about whatever their issue might be, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, I'd be glad to have them come in for a consultation, and they would call my office at 929-1901, and we're here downtown Columbia on Laurel Street.
I thank you so much for coming and sharing on Health, Wealth, and Happiness.